This is a new live son of a bitch.
Bull frickin' horse shit.
I hate to go all technical on you, but all hands on deck, swirly thing alert.
Attention.
Listen, you motherfuckers.
Buckle up, pedal heads.
You're experiencing the Lotus Effect with Phoenix and Phone Boy.
I have come here to chew bubblegum and kick ass. And I'm all out of bubblegum.
It's a bold strategy, Cotton. Let's see if it pays off for him.
You are my podcast. My only podcast. So if you fucking take my podcast away, I'm going to shove my foot so far up your ass.
It is out of sheer morbid curiosity I'm allowing this freak show to continue.
How do you fix that, though?
Take a big step back and literally
suck my dick.
Are you interested? I know you are, because it's fuck or walk.
You're shitting me.
Have you made your decision for Christ?
To tell you the truth, I don't give a shit.
Well, you know who else doesn't give a shit?
Phoenix and Phone Boy?
Ah, not them again!
Oh, they're horrible.
I don't know what the fuck you're talking about.
Right.
Right. Anyway, hello, y'all. This is episode 205 of the podcast they call The Lotus Effect. That is provisionally titled Occasionally Competent. Well, we are that. And as you know by now, the show's made up. The content doesn't really matter. And I'm Phone Boy.
I want to talk to you about my penis.
I'll cradle the balls, stroke the shaft, work the pipe, and swallow the grating. Get it over here, buddy. Let's do this.
That's right. Get it over here, buddy, because I'm Phoenix. And
wait a minute, that's the after party.
That's right. It is.
Yeah, exactly. We're gonna fap on the mic, but just not like that. However you're listening to us, so if you're listening on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, hey, how you doing? If you're listening on LotusEffect.live, that's great too. If you're listening on a pre-record on LotusEffect.show, that's groovy too.
Do that.
So
I've actually been using the .live for work.
Now, the .live is just
pretty stable.
Yes, well, it's yeah.
The only thing that sucks is no meta. Boo, no metadata.
Yeah, no metadata because it was funny. I was thinking about that this morning in bed, but that's a whole different discussion.
You know, you're a nerd when you're laying in bed thinking about metadata.
Yes, but there's a bunch of nerds in our damn chat, and we're all freaking out.
What is this? A freak out?
This is kind of strange.
This is terrific.
Gonna be sick.
Not a speck of light is showing, so the danger must be growing. Are the fires of hell aglowing? Is the grisly reaper mowing? Yes, the danger must be growing, for the rowers keep on rowing, and they're certainly not showing any signs that they are slowing.
I just had an orgasm.
The guy is jizzing all over himself.
I'm freaking out, man.
You are freaking out, man.
Well, you know, if you've never experienced the Lotus Effect before, you might freak out. And sometimes you might experience it differently, and that might cause you to freak out. But, you know, however and wherever the Lotus is touching you, we'd love to hear about it.
I got mail! Yay!
I got you a dollar.
Yeah, funny. I played the original clip that came from. You got to work harder, whatever it was. You got to be quicker.
Oh, you got to be quicker than that.
You got to be quicker than that. Yeah. So we put a lot of time in putting this shit show together, and we are very big on the value for value model, which actually, you know, and it's not just about this podcast, but pretty much everything we do. We look at everything in terms of time, talent, and treasure. Right now, the value for value. Are you what you're putting in? Are you getting a commensurate return on investment? Right. And there's lots of ways to measure value. It's not just currency. Right. That's the beautiful thing about it. Now, you can send us your treasure. Right. And we're not against that, but we're not promoting it, right?
It's not our main focus.
It's not our main focus, but you can go to lotuseffect.show and click on that green We Like Money button, and you can use PayPal to send us some cash. Or if you're a Cash App person like a weirdo is, you can use the hashtag $TheLotusEffect33. Now, if you want to buy our buy merch that has our brand feces smeared all over it, then you can go to lotuseffect.shop and go look at what we got there. You can also set up a one-time or recurring donation if you want to, although I'm not sure why you would, but it is possible. But we do know that Sharky... Yeah, so Sharky here has done his monthly donation of $7.66 a month.
Oh, you the executive producer.
Yeah, I guess he dropped a syllable there along the way. Yeah, this is a, you know, like, yeah.
Sounds like he had the hiccups.
Yeah, he might have had the hiccups. But anyway, we understand that, you know, like I said, we're not about the money here, and we know that, you know, cash is tight and shit, right? So, we want to make sure that we're getting value out of this. And for us, again, it's not the cash. It's really not the cash. It's the ack, right? send back the ack. Let us know you're listening. There's a couple ways to do that. Now, you could, of course, subscribe to your podcast app, subscribe to this podcast in your favorite podcast app, and you can rate, follow, review, share with your friends. We are in Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and pretty much, and you can dump us into any RSS, you know, any RSS feed accepting podcast app. I think even Apple Podcasts does it. Now, of course, if you want to follow us on what they call the social medias, you can look up Mastodon. Yes, I am Phoneboy at lotuseffect.social. My partner here is PHEONIX at lotuseffect.social.
That's Phoenix for those who don't know how to word.
Yes. And there's also, you can send us an email. I don't give a fuck at lotuseffect.show, which you'll go
yes,
to.
Yes, I love that. Yeah.
And then if you don't want to do that, you can send it to phoneboy at lotuseffect.show. It does the same thing.
It is an actual email address, though, in all honesty.
It all is. And you can snail mail us if you'd like. Just contact us in the back channel if you'd like. Now, part of sending back the ACK is joining us live, right? When we're doing either Rideshare Radio or 2.5 Bens, which happens on Fridays at 9 p.m. Eastern, 8 Central, or during the Lotus Effect in Studio 33, which starts Saturdays at 5 p.m. Eastern. And you can get all the details on how to stuff it into your VLC or whatever you want to do, or you just want to just hit a play button on lotuseffect.live, you can do that too, right? So all of the podcast information for all of the podcasts we do are listed there. It's kind of a nice central thing. We've also got a Studio 33.live, a Rideshare Radio.live, and 2.5 Bens.live. They all point to the same page, honestly, but depends on which podcast we're marketing that evening, right? So anyway, now the other thing you can do, another ways you can send back the ACK is to call or text 253-237-3321.
One ringy dingy. Two ringy dingy.
Dell Computers, this is Chip.
I'm sorry, sir, but that line is boozy.
Oh, that line is always boozy because Google Voice answers it and will definitely mangle your transcript, and you could end up becoming a show title, which is a great probability. And of course, other than calling to give us feedback, you would be calling to weigh in, as we call it, on a certain topic. And this week, we want to know, what is your favorite thing about fall? It doesn't matter what it is. We just want to know what it is. So call 253-237-3321 and let us know. And next week, something to noodle on. We want to know what your favorite fall beverage is. So, this week, what's your favorite thing about fall? 253-237-3321.
Yeah, well, now I think we've gotten through all of that. So
I think so.
And it's time to take it from Dr. Johnny Fever.
So just sit right down, relax, open your ears real wide, and say, give it to me straight, doctor, I can take it.
You got to be able to take it. You got to be able to take the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. But we're not taking this.
We don't want your shit.
Please don't send us your shit.
Yeah, you can break our balls, but be respectful, folks. Yeah, exactly. Let's keep it above board here. You know, we're all in this together, and...
I just want to tell you both good luck. We're all counting on you.
Yeah, we're all...
I don't know what they're counting on us for, but they're counting on us.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I think they're counting on us to maybe keep the show moving. And we start off with the health segment, which will never, ever, ever be.
Brought to you by Pfizer.
Oh, when I saw this article, I kind of went, I'm going to hate this, which means I have to cover it. Plant-based or low-carb, which is better for diabetes prevention?
Diabetes, 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 diabetes,
Diabetes.
Wreck Me, Jerry Lewis. Oh, wait a minute. That's a different song. November is National Diabetes Month, and new research suggests that most Americans are open to making big dietary changes if it could help prevent or control this condition. Yeah, it can. Anyway, a national poll conducted by the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine. Oh, that sounds like a mouthful. And Morning Consult.
Oh, it's a mouthful, all right. And I think we know of what.
Yeah. They found that 65% of U.S. adults would consider adopting a low-fat, plant-based diet if their doctor recommended it. You know, why do people need a fucking doctor to tell them what to fucking eat?
Because they're not smart enough to figure it out on their own.
They don't. They also don't. Yeah, they don't want to figure it out. They just want the simple, easy solution.
Well, that's like the whole point of this article when it says, oh, they're open to making these changes. Yeah, till they figure out what it actually entails, then
not so much. Right. Yeah. So while many people know that eating more vegetables and fruits can lower diabetes risk, anyway, far fewer are aware that a low-fat, plant-based eating pattern, rich in fruits, vegetables, grains, and beans, you know, because the more you eat, the more you toot. Well, anyway, and it helps prevent or even reverse the disease. I don't know too many people who have eaten a, anyway, I'm not even getting into the McDougal shit, right? Because he said, oh, yeah, you can eat sugar, you know, it's like, yes, sugar cures diabetes. Oh, my God.
You also know he is currently worm food.
Yes, I'm aware of this, but I still, anyway, yeah.
That speaks for itself. The results speak for themselves.
That's right. I'd rather have Vinny Tortorich, you know, anyway, than that.
Look at Tortorich and then look at McDougal, and I mean before he became worm food. Hands down, Vinny is ripped for a man his age. McDougal.
Yeah. Well, also Michael Greger is another one to look at.
Oh my God, that man is just the way he sucked that fruit out of the shell of its skin, like that. There's something wrong with that man.
Something very wrong. Now, okay, so research.
Something wrong with his funking wax.
That's too. Yes, research cited by the Physicians Committee indicates that low carb diets based on animal products are associated with an increased risk of type 2 diabetes. And of course, no verifiable details were provided about this research. So they just took it as fact. Didn't really try to support it.
Hold on. So wait a minute. So all these people who are like massively carnivore, kind of sort of like us, even more extreme than us, if you will.
Yeah, you're talking about like Sean Baker, right? By the way, that's another dude. You look at how that dude is built. Yeah.
This is what I'm saying, though. All these people who are super carnivore, look at them. Are they obese? Do they have type 2 diabetes? I guarantee you the answer to that is no.
Okay, so now here we go. In one 22-week study, 99 participants followed either a low-fat vegan diet without calorie or unprocessed carbohydrate limits or the American Diabetes Association's standard recommended diet. Oh, we know what that is.
So basically, it was a Kobayashi Maru because neither one is a good choice.
Now, research showed that the 43% of the vegan group were able to reduce or discontinue their diabetes medications compared with only 26% of the ADA group. Yeah, because the vegan diet... You actually eliminate some of the bullshit, so you're going to get better. Yeah, that makes sense. But notice that there's absolutely no comparison.
Hold on, though. Realize that they covered their asses by, say, reduce or discontinue. There could have been all of maybe one to two people in that entire group they were able to discontinue because of that.
Yes.
Just take that into consideration when you read a statement like that, folks.
Yes. Now, and we know what, they didn't know a comparison. There's no head to, notice that all of these articles that say a plant-based diet is better, they never actually do a head-to-head comparison between the two to see what happens. Why? Because they'd fucking lose, and they know it.
Precisely.
Now, and of course, the article, blah, blah, you know, they say, well, all right, you really shouldn't eat meat, but, you know, it's okay once in a while, and, you know, but it's basically like they're pushing the same old fucking bullshit that they always do, and this stuff gets press, and anyway, like...
But it's worse than that because of the fact that you're talking about vegan where you don't have any eggs. Eggs are life, man. Or cheese. You people need help. If you're vegans and you are eating handfuls of pills... and thinking that, like, but I love the animals. I'm saving them. Yeah, while you're killing yourself. Way to go, Megan.
All right. Well, how about we go to this next story where...
I know someone who is going to absolutely love this story because RFK Jr. has linked aluminum in vaccines to peanut allergies. And here are the facts.
You might die.
Experts say there's no scientific proof to back up Health and Human Services Secretary Robert Kennedy Jr.'s assertion that aluminum in childhood vaccines is linked to peanut allergies in children. At a leadership forum this week, sponsored by the Food Allergy Fund, Kennedy said he didn't believe that a lack of early exposure to peanuts was the cause of peanut allergies. Instead, the health secretary suggested aluminum in vaccines could be a potential factor. He stated that aluminum was introduced into vaccines about the same time as the increase in peanut allergies began, a claim disputed by experts.
And we know what experts are.
Exactly. Kennedy said his federal health agency is planning to conduct research into food allergies and its causes. However, experts say Kennedy's remarks are off base and could discourage parents from vaccinating their children. Aluminum has been part of the majority of pediatric and adult vaccines for more than 8 decades, some experts told Healthline. If aluminum were the cause, food allergies should be on a continuous rise for 8 decades. Excuse me, they fucking have been, you retarded pricks. But many vaccines.
Well, no, I'll tell you. I want to go ahead. No, this is. I think this is more important. So, how many? This, and I think this is a really important point, right? Because you and I had talked about this, and I think we even get into this, maybe even in the story. But how many vaccines were we required to take in 8 decades ago? Right?
Maybe 5 to 8.
Well, no. I mean, how many were?
Yeah, required. Yeah,
I'm talking. Well, no, in schools. I mean, we only had.
There was the MMR.
I said eight decades ago was like the 1930s, right?
So decades ago, shit. Some of them didn't even exist.
That's right. So my point is that So we went from maybe we got a vaccine if we had a need for something, right? To now they're pretty much mandatory, and we're ramping up the number of things. So it's not just the fact that we've had them in eight decades. You've also been telling us to take more vaccines. Right. So you're now injecting more of the poison. Right. And, more often. Yeah, it's going to cause more of a problem.
I think that he has a point in this. I will just be bold in saying I definitely think that there is some weight to his statements and those of Foam Boys about the amount of vaccines that, say, within the last 8 decades has increased for questionable reasons, but that's just my opinion, man. So aluminum was first introduced into vaccines in 1926, more than 70 years before any increase in peanut allergies was detected. The metal is used in vaccines as an adjuvant, a component that enhances the immune response to the vaccine. Adjuvants enable the use of smaller quantities of a vaccine in fewer doses. Aluminum is the third most abundant element after oxygen and silicon on Earth. It's found in food, beverages, soil, health products, and various manufactured products, including airplanes. Great! So we're injecting airplanes. That's great. So it's estimated that people typically ingest 7 to 9 milligrams of aluminum per day, a substance that the kidneys filter out. But has this actually been tested? And ingesting is different than injecting, but anyway. An estimated 33 million people in the U.S. have a food allergy. That includes about 1 in 10 adults and 1 in 13 children. Yeah, but no correlation here, huh, Foam Boy?
Yeah, no.
About half of U.S. adults with food allergies report having had a severe reaction. Slightly more than 40% of children with food allergies have had severe reactions. Reactions, which can include life-threatening anaphylactic attacks, occurring when the body sees an allergen in a food as an intruder and attacks it. I have seen this when I worked as an EMT. It is very scary. Your airway closes up. You're just basically, you're afraid you're going to die. And with the soaring price of epinephrine pens, aka EpiPens, because fuck Big Pharma, that's a life-saving drug for someone who's going through an attack like that. and God forbid EMS is a far bit away, your chances of survival minus oxygen get lower and lower every moment. It's frightening. And I've experienced that, but we're not going into that. So peanuts are one of the 9 most common food allergies in the U.S. It's estimated that approximately 2% of U.S. children may have a peanut allergy, and as many as 20% of them outgrow it as adults. Yeah, because the vaccines start wearing the fuck off in your body. My question is, how many occurrences of peanut allergies did you encounter growing up? All of y'all. I know we're a varied age group, but how many people do you remember when you were younger having a peanut allergy? And again, you know, how many vaccines, like we were talking about before?
I think maybe like 3 or something, right?
And I could probably ask my mom, but I don't think there were that many, truly.
Yeah, and now it's like, yeah, now the schedule is just crazy. I don't know, I'm sure it's been covered on other podcasts, and you know, it's just like, no. You wonder why it's like, okay, yeah, okay, maybe in one vaccine it's okay, but you know, they never do the studies of all of these vaccines interacting together, right? And what's going to happen, right, when all this shit gets it, yeah. Like, oh my God. Anyway.
No, we don't disagree, phone boy. You and I are definitely on the same page. But again, I'm going to be very brave to go out there and say that I truly believe that the aluminum that is in these vaccines could possibly be causing these allergies. And oh, by the way, I still believe that vaccines do cause autism.
Well, there you go. All right. So now let's talk about the science. The science that could change how you think about protein.
All animal proteins are complete. They contain every amino acid we need and in the proper proportions, I might add, whereas most plant proteins are incomplete.
Yes. Now, of course, pretty much everything's got snack bars, yogurts, ice cream, bottled water, also coffee at Starbucks, right? They seem like they figured out ways to put more protein, right, into everything. Now, and so protein-fortified foods and protein supplements form a market worth tens of billions of U.S. dollars, with fitness influencers as well as some researchers and physicians promoting high-protein diets as the secret to strength and longevity. Protein is undeniably essential, but how much people really need is still a topic for debate. Now, of course, as George Eade says there, right? Not all proteins are created equal, right? Now, most official guidelines recommend a minimum of close to 1 gram of protein per kilogram of body weight per day, or the equivalent of about 250 grams of cooked chicken, which contains around 68 grams of protein for an adult weighing 70 kilograms. So on the other hand, a growing narrative in the wellness circles encourages people to eat more than double that amount. Many scientists fall somewhere in the middle and take issue with some of the advice circulating online. Now, not all proteins are the same, right? And some researchers argue for a more nuanced recommendation that takes into account the amino acids, the building blocks of proteins that foods contain. The human body requires 20 amino acids to function properly, including 9 that are essential because the body can't make them, right? So if it's one of these 9, right, the body doesn't have any more. If it's the other 11, right, then the body can figure, from what it's got, it can piece together what it does, right? Now, the body is amazing what it does in, with that regard. Now, the balance of those 9 in animal-based foods is exactly what other animals need, say layman, which means, which makes it...
And we are animals, folks, yes, believe it or not.
Yes. The plants, the essential amino acids, are generally there, but they're in proportions for the plants. That means that some plants might be rich in certain amino acids, but not another. So meeting the amino acid requirements with plant-based products might require a greater variety of foods. Yeah. Like some animal products in there. But anyway, now, so... Of course, we talk about this layman dude. He's critical of the way that official dietary guidelines calculate the recommendations for protein from different sources. For example, according to the U.S. Department of Agriculture, 14 grams of almonds can substitute 28 grams of chicken breast.
Except for the problem is if you eat too many almonds, folks, yeah, you're going to get the Shiites.
Yes, and I've had that happen on more than one occasion. So research by Lehman and his colleagues, which consider the amino acid balance, suggests that it would actually take more than 115 grams of almonds to substitute 28 grams of chicken. Talk about colon blow.
Yeah, on top of which, who? Okay, almonds? Chicken. I don't think it's really a I don't think it's really a hard decision.
Robert Wolf, a researcher focusing on muscle metabolism at the University of Arkansas for Medical Sciences in Little Rock, says that dietary guidelines should incorporate the analysis of the quality of the protein, including the amino acid balance and the degree to which the human body can digest them. That's another thing, too, is how bioavailable is it? And in fact, this is also something, right? The animal protein is very bioavailable for humans. Plants can't run away like animals can, right? So they actually have stuff built into them that make it undesirable or maybe more difficult for you to eat. They poison you a little bit, right? So, now one area for further research, Wolf says, is understanding exactly how food processing affects protein content. Factors such as cooking temperature, for example, can influence how well the body digests protein. This can have implications for certain protein supplements and high protein bars, which are generally highly processed. Yes, they are. Obtaining that information.
Hold on. Not to mention being full of sugar.
Yes. Fake or otherwise. So obtaining
that.
Yeah,
we know what that fake sugar does to your GI tract.
Yes, exactly. So obtaining that information requires going beyond nitrogen balance studies. Now, Wolf's team has used isotope tracers to determine the rate at which food protein is incorporated into new proteins in the body. One study of 56 young adults, for example, concluded that eating animal-based products proteins resulted in a greater gain in body protein than did eating the equivalent amount of plant-based protein. Yeah, there you go. Yeah, try to say that. But studies in this area are still small and shouldn't be taken to mean that people must get all their protein from animal sources. Now, considering that animal products contain all 9 essential amino acids by default, maybe that's a better choice, but what the fuck do I know? The American Heart Association, yet another one of these compromised organizations, recommends prioritizing plant proteins given that the saturated fat found in red meats can increase the risk of cardiovascular disease.
Bullshit.
Yes. There is also a high environmental cost associated with meat production, which is a major source of greenhouse gas emissions. Bullshit.
Yeah, not as many as your fucking data centers, you AI pricks.
Yeah, not to mention trying to keep fields clear of all of those plants that you want to eat. Yeah, you know, there's animals that try to eat that shit. What happens to those animals? They get killed.
That's right. Watch
so if you're about if so so if and this is actually one of the reasons I like Lierre Keith, right? Because she said, "Hey, I want to try and do this right," and she realized. Yeah, she just kind of went through it and went, yeah, I can't do this, right? There's no way for me to, if I want to be like, not involve animals, right? There's so many things I have to like do instead that, and she physically fell apart, right? I mean, this is a, you know, she tried, I mean, she veganed really hard for a long time and finally gave up and said, you know what? This is not working. It's not appropriate.
It almost killed her.
Yeah, exactly. So, my God. And people, anyway, we're going to move on to this next story.
Take a deep breath, phone boy. My goodness. Oh, it might be a good thing the head troll's not in chat because this one's really going to hit where it hurts. Oh, gosh. Why you don't want to get tuberculosis on your penis?
Don't forget your penis, Crane.
I don't want to know where you found this story. For every male listener, I am sorry on behalf of what is wrong with you, sir. A man in Ireland earned the unpleasant distinction of developing an exceedingly rare infection on his penis, one that has a puzzling origin but may be connected to his work with dead animals? What the fuck, phone boy? You did this on purpose, you bastard. According to an article published in ASM Case Reports on Thursday, the 57-year-old man went to a hospital in Dublin after his penis became red, swollen, and painful over the course of a week. Stop fucking sheep. He also had a fever. Doctors promptly admitted him to the hospital and noted that he had received a kidney transplant 15 years prior. As such, he was on immunosuppressive drugs, which keep his body from rejecting the organ, but could also allow infections to run amok. Initial blood work found hints of an infection, and the doctors initially suspected a bacterial skin infection, cellulitis, had taken hold of his nether regions. So they put him on some standard antibiotics for it. But his penis only got worse, redder and more swollen. This prompted consultation with an infectious disease doctor. A more thorough review of the man's case revealed that in the 3 months before his hospital visit, he had experienced fever, drenching night sweats, chills, loss of appetite, and weight loss. They also noted he had had a lot of dead animal exposure. He was born and raised on a farm in rural Ireland, worked as a butcher handling deer and occasionally cattle, and was an avid hunter who field-dressed game. Military tuberculosis.
That
looked like military. Yeah, seriously.
Military tuberculosis. I'm writing it down.
Go ahead. Miliary tuberculosis, MTB, is a severe form of tuberculosis in which the instigating bacteria, Mycobacterium tuberculosis, or potentially a relative that infects cows and deer, Mycobacterium bovis, spread widely through the body and create small lesions. The name miliary dates back to 1700 when a physician noted that the specks resembled millet seeds. Treatment for tuberculosis requires a regimen of several antibiotics and takes months. In the man's case, they customized his treatment with a 12-month four-drug regimen that wouldn't interfere with his transplant. Still, the penile lesions got worse before it got better. He developed a large necrotic ulceration on the side of his penis, and his foreskin began to break down. Surgeons had to mechanically cut out the dead tissue. After 10 months, his infection appeared to have cleared, and his penile lesion had improved. It remains unclear how the man got the infection. Oh, really? He told doctors he wasn't aware of coming in contact with any tuberculosis patients and wasn't in settings where the bacteria normally spread, such as prisons. It's possible that the bacteria had been lurking in his transplanted kidney. That is kind of creepy. However, doctors speculated that it could also have been due to his animal exposure. Oh, God, the jokes are writing themselves. Deer and cows are known to spread M. bovis, and people who hunt and butcher animals are known to be at risk. These workers can become infected from inhaling it from the exhaled breath of an infected animal or from direct contact with an infected animal's wounded tissue or body fluids, such as what happens during slaughtering.
Or other things.
No, you went there! You went there! I tried to take the high ground. I tried.
Come on, the jokes wrote themselves, honey.
You trapped me.
So here's the funny thing about this particular story was this. I had collected all the stories for the script, and then I do the thing, and I'm like, I get to a story, and I'm like, I need to find another story because this story sucks. I found this one. I'm like, TB on your PP.
Oh my God, that's just so wrong.
Which I need to write down. Yeah, TB on my peepee, I think. Yes,
you need to write that down. You're so God.
Yeah, I mean,
you guys cannot see me blush behind the mic, but that one just about got me. Like, oh no. Nope. The jokes were just asking so bad to be. Yeah, no. No. That, you know what though? That made me happy.
Yeah, let's be
it was
happy.
Good stuff.
If you're happy and you know it, clap your hands.
Fuck you. All right. So I like this story because, well, it's actually kind of relevant to something we enjoy here, football, because our team is playing their team on Monday night. The heart transplant survivor has the best day ever as a traveling fan for Carolina gets to meet Panthers legend.
Your sports team is vastly inferior.
From a chilly Green Bay comes a heart-melting story via Charlotte, where a heart transplant survivor had the day of his life as a traveling fan for his beloved Carolina Panthers. We're actually doing pretty good this year. Bryson Shoup was born with a congenital heart defect and at 8 years old required open-heart surgery to survive. At Atrium Health Levine Children's Hospital, he lay in the transplant ward next to another boy named TJ Olson. Now, TJ is the son of a famous retired tight end for the Panthers, Greg Olson. He's actually good at it in the color commentary, too. And while the sportscaster was visiting his son, he created a lasting friendship with young Bryson as well. It birthed a deep love of Panthers football and a bond that wasn't to be forgotten. So Bryson successfully underwent and recovered from surgery, and 8 years later had the incredible opportunity to travel to Green Bay, a stadium I want to go to, honestly, and to watch his Panthers as they engineered a surprise victory over the Packers. Now, Bryson got VIP treatment, and along with visiting the cockpit on his first ever flight out of Charlotte, was invited down to the field where he got to watch pregame warmups and chat with quarterback Bryce Young, all while wearing a personalized set of fan gear, including a jersey with his name on the back that was signed by the team. Then Bryson took a trip up to the media deck where he reunited with Olsen, who gave him a big bear hug and asked, "How good is this? How is this for a day?" Levine Children's Hospital shared photos of Bryson enjoying every part of the special day, writing, "We're so proud to see Bryson having the time of his life." Bryson himself shared a message to transplant patients and others back home at the institute that saved his life. "Keep pounding," which is actually, I think, what that's the team slogan, I think. So,
yeah.
Yeah, so, yeah, that was a good one. Yeah, that's, that, you know.
That's cute.
That's a cute story, and, yeah, I you know, I don't, anyway, I'm not Carolina fans this week.
Yeah, we usually would be on something like that, but no, we need to stomp the shit out of them.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, God, I don't, we're not talking about sports ball right now, but what we are talking about is a community that has rallied to protect a local cobbler until a supermarket cancels its plans to expand.
Oh, it starts with sweatshop labor in a foreign factory and gets packed on a vessel and shipped over the sea.
When a corporate shoe repair chain wanted to open a location in a Gloucestershire town, locals rallied in a signature gathering campaign to protect their local cobbler. An example of small town sanctity, the petition to reject the corporate newcomer was promoted on social media and collected a total of 1,000 signatures from people in the area, including the local parliament member. A UK grocery chain, Tesco, yes, that's Walmart here in the States, had submitted a planning application to open a new Timpson store, which is a UK chain that for 160 years has offered dry cleaning, watch repair, key duplication, photo printing, engraving, portraiture, and shoe repair all at one location. Alan MacDonald has run MacDonald's Traditional Cobbler for 30 years and lamented that the new Timpson store would be placed across the street and make it difficult for his business to continue. Villagers in the town of Bishop Cleeve launched a petition to block the supermarket's planning application, according to MacDonald's worries for his cobbler shop. Resident Gemma Sermon decided to start a petition asking the supermarket to withdraw the planning application. When the application was due to be discussed at a parish council meeting, Tesco confirmed it would not be progressing without specifying if this was due to the petition. Okay, it took me a second to understand what I was reading there. Okay, so they said they weren't going to be progressing, but they didn't specify if it was due to the petition. All right, I got it. We're good. So MacDonald said that even beyond just his own concerns, the planning application got some 80 objections from locals. "It's a weight off my mind. I don't make a massive amount of money here," said MacDonald in his Gloucestershire twang with a dash of Glaswegian. "Sorry. Even a small amount of my income that disappears would make it very difficult to survive." Alan's grandfather opened a cobbler business in 1930 in Maryhill Road in Glasgow, and before passing away in his 70s and leaving it to his son, Alan's father, to take it over. He remembered helping his father as a youngster in the shop, and when his dad's business fell over, he decided to join the family trade in 1995 and open a shop in Bishop Cleeve. Like Timpson's, MacDonald offered watch repair and key duplication. "I've become part of the community now, and it's a lovely place to live in. People are so supportive," he said. "All I can say to the community is thank you so, so much. And it means I can never retire." I love that little stinger at the end. I can never retire.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, it is, and yeah, I mean, there's a nice thing about a small town is, yeah, you know your neighbors, right? And I don't think that's a bad thing necessarily, because
I mean, I kind of like that and wish, like, even though this is, quote, a quaint southern town.
That way we call it a not-so-quaint southern town,
yeah,
for reasons.
Yeah, we do, because it kind of has a stank on it.
Yeah, it does. Well, you know, the Bucky's thing, but anyway, that's a whole different discussion. But it's stuff like that that is coming.
Well, the over-influx of Weigels that wipes out two local wineries doesn't help either.
No.
Big corporation can fuck off.
Exactly. Well, all right, you know, what can fuck off is, well, all that stuff.
All that seriousness, because it's time for the Cavalcade of Stupidity!
Hi-dee-ho, pedalheads, and welcome to Sir Reverend Cybertrucker's Cavalcade of Stupidity. Known as Avian Invasion and Hallie of Furpine, real name Matthew Abel, is a furry who is a professional musician. He's been musical guest at multiple conventions and was guest of honor at Furry Weekend Atlanta 2009, Further Confusion 2012, Feral 2016, and Fernal Equinox 2024. Under his real name, Matthew is known for having been an early pioneer of streaming performances online and allowing fans to provide direct patronage to artists, having set up the Officers Club in 2008, 5 years prior to the launch of Patreon. Matthew has also hosted and produced the High Orbit Podcast, a space-themed music and news podcast in which Captain Abel, along with various robot companions, traveled through space aboard the UTF Revolution on the run from the Supreme Empress. From the 2007 album Goodbye Planet Earth, this is Matthew Abel. Everybody needs a ninja.
Everybody needs a ninja. Something I have always said. 'Cause you never know when someone else might wanna see you dead. Everybody needs a ninja. Ninjas know just when to strike. Huh. Though they dress the same, I'd never say that they all look alike. 'Cause that ain't right. They do ninja moves with ninja things. Watch ninja ball with ninja wings. Ninja beers that they can kill one bottle at a time. They strike from near or far away. You'll never know if you're their prey. They always make their getaway. No ninja prints or stars are left behind. Everybody needs a ninja. Maybe one or two would work. So that you can use one when you're.
All right, so that's pretty good. Now, a little behind the mic thing. So, related to this. So, we don't play these beforehand. Before we play, so we listen to these with y'all, right? When we play them, I mean, I literally will pull them up.
Much like how I cold read the articles.
Yeah, I literally just get the clip from Rev and hit the and you know, load it in the soundboard, hit play at the appropriate time, and there you go, right? That's great stuff. We'll play the full version in Studio 33. Yeah, so I think now we go to the Tales from Rideshare segment.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. Not a lot of noteworthy things. One thing stood out this week, and I've actually got a link that will be in the show notes, was something that came into my ethos. And y'all know, on 2.5 Bens especially, yours truly just can't get enough of fussing about AI. However, an interesting application to AI has come into my ethos, and that is the use of AI in agricultural machinery. Those big-ass machines you see out there running crop, this, that, and the other thing. Well, AI's got involved in this, and there's actually a company called Agtonomy that works with these machines, you know. And what was interesting was I had a good laugh with one of my customers that I guess works for this company. He is in his 50s and was talking. He even got a duck, so I hope he's listening. he was talking about the design on one of these tractors, and it has one of those red light bars where the light goes back and forth. And all of you Battlestar Galactica folks will understand the Cylon.
Yes, exactly.
Reference.
Yeah,
there.
I know Mama does because I know Dad and her both watched. Probably both versions of Battlestar Galactica. But
just think about that. 3 o'clock in the morning, you get up to take a piss as a farmer. You look out the window, and you're of that age. And you,
whoosh, whoosh.
Yeah, and you fucking see this red light just zoop, zoop, back and forth. You're like, nope, nope, fuck it. Grab the kids and the dog. Fuck the crops. We're out of here.
I was gonna you've got Kit or Carr
he also mentioned Kit, funny enough, in that conversation, and it's just the guy he was talking to is like in his 20s and has no clue, you know, to be able to reference what this guy's talking about. So of course, you know, he pulls it up on I guess YouTube or whatever to show him, but it's like, you know, your company might want to think about the branding behind this, considering X. Like, it's amazing. The sci-fi is now becoming, you know, the sci-reality.
Yeah, no kidding. There's companies make all kinds of mistakes.
Here's the thing, though, guys. Like I said, we're going to include the link to this company. Check them out. I'm not shitting on them. They're interesting in their technology and what they're doing. I do fully support the idea that, you know, if we could run these machines, maybe we wouldn't need these whiny-ass fucking illegals that are bitching about the fact that, you know, oh, well, you know, if you undo this work visa, then who's going to pick the crops? AI, motherfucker. And oh, by the way, you know, okay, so side digression, because he and I were talking about this, and this is kind of disturbing. And as a Californian, I think you should possibly be disturbed by this, sir. Do you know it's only recently that those migrant workers actually got because of all the listeria outbreaks and everything, it's only recently that they've mandated having bathroom facilities and a place you can wash your fucking hands for these folks?
No, I'm not surprised.
I mean, seriously, I'm having a Bemrose what the fuck moment, phone boy. Because how is that? Fucking hell.
Have you seen how these states are run, honey? I mean,
this comes down to a health thing.
Yes, I know, but
this is government. This is higher than
look at the people that are in charge, honey.
That shouldn't be.
Yeah, and tell me tell me if you're at all surprised that that's even a thing. I just kind of look at that and I go, yeah, considering who the fuck's in charge, I'm not surprised because I don't give a fuck about you.
But this is about more than that. This is literally about the fact of how...
Honey, they don't give a fuck about you. That they're not going to give a fuck that you're clean either.
So you're saying government standard-wise?
No, I'm saying that they're... Well, okay, there's government standards, and then there's enforcing the government standards, right?
I understand fuck?
No, but they don't care, honey. They don't... They just don't care. That's why this is the way it is. We don't treat people.
Crazy.
We don't treat people. People in our government who claim to be looking out for us don't treat people with basic dignity and respect.
Well, especially the illegals. And I'm the first person to say, if you're not here legally, get the fuck out. But at the same point in time, that doesn't mean treat this person like less than a human being by not giving them proper... I mean, they're shitting in our food fields, folks. How has this been able to go on for so long? Because it finally leached into the fucking soil? Because people finally started getting sick? Because this was happening? This is mind-blowing.
Yes. Well, but yeah, again, they don't care. They don't have to, honey.
Clearly. Buy from your local farmer's market at every opportunity, folks.
Anyway, let's go to the Toast and Jam segment.
Well, I'm a bum in the sun, and I'm having fun, and I know you know I got no special plans.
Yeah, well, you know, we plan to talk about your favorite fall, what you like about fall, right? And if you haven't called in to 253-237-3321, well, we'll play those calls in the next segment. right? That's what, or if you're listening to this on a recording, you can still call 253-237-3321. We'll eventually play it and comment on it. It's a great thing about it. Honey, what are we cooking tonight?
I'm making like actual food that's cooked.
We're going to Denny's?
Yeah, actually, this isn't exactly a phone it in, but I had gotten this amazing recipe, and I have this amazing recipe for this Polish soup called kapusta that I had made and put into jars, and it is paying dividends tonight. So thank you, Poem435. She is who gave me that recipe, and we are going to open up a couple of those jars, heat it up, and it is going to be...
It's like an orgy in my mouth, and everybody's coming.
Oh, it's an orgy. Got it.
Okay, well, that's good that you forgot something from Tales from Right Here, because we don't have a lot in Toast and Jam, so why don't you go with your talk about the Tarot Girl.
I really wasn't going to talk about it. I just happened to give one of the writers a duck, and the fact that you do tarot might mean that you might actually do a tarot reading for someone
who has not called in. So
that's right.
As far as I know, anyway, I have not.
Right, but if.
Yeah, but anyway, I don't think so, because yeah, I need to look at the voicemail things. But anyway, so we've been having a lot of weird tech issues lately. Part of the migraine issues. So I think in order to tell the whole story, I actually do have to mention the fact that, yeah, I had a migraine like earlier this week that, and honestly, like I needed a dark place. Let's just say that. And I needed to be comfortable. So, in the studio, I come up to the studio, and unfortunately, there's a lot of things in the studio that generate light. One of the biggest source after I turn off all the lights is the Rodecaster, right? So I turned off the Rodecaster, and so I had a webinar the next morning. And in any case, I turn everything back on. The mute button doesn't work on my Rodecaster. None of the buttons were working, in fact. I don't know. I had to reboot it a couple of times, and I was having issues getting it all connected, reconnected. It was just, I mean, it was like jiggling every handle six ways from Sunday, and yet it somehow came together, like, you know, right before I had to start. But using the, I can't fix my, you know, usually I have a problem hitting the mute button, you know, hitting it, but I couldn't mute myself. I couldn't make any of the buttons on the Rodecaster work. It just kind of went. So I thought that was funny.
Not when you're about to start a frigging work thing. It isn't.
No, it's not. That's for true. But, and somewhat related to work and also kind of related to the show is, so I'd been for the cruise, I had bought a Zoom recorder, right? And the idea behind it was to maybe record some stuff, sort of away from computers or whatever. And, you know, we had some grand ideas that we didn't end up using during the cruise, but we might have some other...
The opportunities really didn't present themselves. It ended up just being a really shitty experience.
Yeah, exactly. But... Well, and so I when we got back, I'm like, well, I spent the money for this. And so we ended up using it as the backup recorder for the, especially when we're having issues with having the Rodecaster do it, which has a record button, but I don't trust it anymore. So that's why I'm using an external backup device. Now, that also enables me to use basically all of the Rodecaster shit and keep it sort of firewalled from my, so I got a Zoom H1 XLR, the thing fits in my hand. It's like, you know, it runs on two AA batteries, and it has two XLR/quarter inch inputs on the top, and it has a USB-C connection, which you can then plug in as an audio interface. Has some output ports, and it has some basic record functionality, and so that's kind of what I'm doing right now. And unfortunately, trying to get that integrated wasn't a big deal, but I realized I had. To, I don't know. I discovered that the connection between my Rodecaster and the XLR, the H1 XLR was, there was some noise somewhere. And, you know, obviously you have to figure out I was giving dog biscuits where I probably shouldn't have given dog biscuits. And so I had to finally got the levels, all that figured out. Of course, I'm also realizing that I've been doing audio shit for 30 years. And I have some cables from 30 years ago, but I also have some cables I've bought the cheap Chinesium they sell on Amazon. I still have cables I bought from fucking Radio Shack, folks. Yeah, that's that. Even that stuff lasted a whole lot better than some of the shit that they sell today. I'll tell you that. So, anyway, but I between all of the adapters and I'm trying to clean up the audio stack here so that but at least now I'm not sending amplifying or sending noise to the back to the Zoom that's doing the backup recording. I was having this conversation with somebody like at work actually because we're talking. I was talking about the audio stuff that I got going on here. And he's like, yeah, you know, so you can, it's amazing. You kind of sit around looking like, shit, when did this happen? What the fuck when did I become that dude? Right. That I've got multiple microphones. I've got multiple Rodecasters. I've got cables I've had for 30 years that still fucking work, by the way. And
welcome to podcasting, Phone Play.
Yeah, welcome to podcasting. Exactly. Well, so I guess I'm, you know, and how much have I, I don't even want it. I'm not doing this for the money, folks, because I'm spending a whole lot more money than I'm making. I'll assure you that. But anyway, it's all good, you know. But I was kind of, I was trying to figure out some of this stuff last night. But you know, it's also kind of hard to troubleshoot a lot of this stuff when you're live on the air, right? But anyway, I'm glad I got this all sorted out, and I've got some more cables coming. Cross fingers. I hope it'll all work.
You do realize that we kind of run the show on the stream, which means if you need to do an audio test and break in, we can do it.
Yeah, I understand that.
As long as we're not doing a show.
Yeah, I understand that. That wasn't what I was worried about, because this is all back end stuff that doesn't go on the stream that I was troubleshooting. So I can't test, you know, it's like Cotton Gin was saying earlier, like, yeah, you wouldn't know the issue because, yeah, it's not something that actually goes over the stream. It's just the backup recording that I was making. And because I'm using that path for other purposes, I wanted to make sure it was clean. So, you know, and I'm, like I said, I've got it working right now. I'm not fucking with it, but it's
exactly.
If you look back here, honey, you can see all of the why I might want to get some better cables there, because I got lots of adapters, and every adapter adds a potential place where you could get noise. And so.
Exactly.
Yeah, and it also just makes it. Yeah.
Yeah, I can see your problem.
Yeah, you can see my problem. But is there anything else that we want to talk about in the toast?
Breaking the balls.
You never even heard it.
What?
You said I can clearly see what your problem is. I said, yeah, Pepcac.
Yeah, that too.
And you never even heard it.
I just ignored it.
Lies. Bullshit lies.
All right. Let's go. The world needs a wake up call, goddammit.
The world needs a wake up call. We're going to phone it in.
253-237-3321. We are dying to know what these pedal heads' favorite thing about fall is, and we're going to hear about it right now.
Well, can you read Mama's text?
I am. She says, the only good thing I can think of about fall is that the grandkids go back to school. This is my second least favorite time of year, topped only by winter. Seasonal affective disorder hits hard. Yeah, we feel that, Mama.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, that's one of the, it's still better here than it was back in the Pacific Northwest. I'll say that. I mean, at least here I see the sunshine occasionally, whereas there you go about 4 or 5 months and all you see is gray. You might get sunshine in 5 minute increments, but
and liquefied.
Yeah, exactly. So, all right, are we gonna play this? I think we're gonna play this. Holy nuts! I'm trying to actually. See if I can actually get this to a point where I can actually see it. Oh my goodness, this is gay. This is a gay. I've also changed. I've done some other stuff in the studio here in terms of trying to make it make better use of screen real estate and that kind of thing. And now I'm getting to the voicemail, and I'm going, yeah, that's not going to work. But we're going to play this voicemail.
Well, autumn is my favorite season, so it's kind of hard to pick just one thing that I like about it. So I'm going to cheat and do two. One is practical. Practical one that I'm favorite on is that the bugs are going away. No more stingy things, no more bitey things. Good. Go away. Go hibernate for the winter or whatever you do. Go fuck off. My favorite, like, ooh, this makes me so happy thing about autumn is I like the sound of leaves crunching and scuttling around in the breeze. I think that's my favorite. So I'll talk to you later. Bye.
Bye.
Um, I completely agree with everything that Dame Jennifer just said. The bugs going away is so damn nice. And that leaf sound, the smell too. There's a smell associated with when the leaves fall. They get a little bit wet. It does remind me of the car spray that I have. That's why I like that smell so much, is because it's literally called leaves. And I can truly smell that wet leaf smell. Not nasty, but like the just fall wet leaf smell in the spices that are mixed in with that spray. And my riders seem to like it. So yeah, I agree completely, Dame Jennifer. Thank you so much for that. And I think we have another pedalhead weighing in.
Yeah, we do. And it goes something like this.
Hello, fun boy. Hello, Phoenix. Salutations. Yeah, blah, 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 blah. Whatever I normally say. Yeah. Favorite fall, or thing, whatever fall. Crisper air and leaves that are falling, dying on trees. But yeah, just the colors, the activities. Got one of those, like, apple places near you or something, or pumpkins or whatever. Heard those are cool. But yeah, just doing that kind of stuff, those activities, bundling up more. Yeah. So, been an exciting week for me. I did a pay period just ended yesterday, and like 159 hours with like 14 hours of double time and all this other stuff in there. So, just kind of crazy at work, but it's for a short period of time. So, it's kind of, it's nice. It's enjoyable. You know, just being able to get that extra where you can, and knowing that it's also just pushing stuff forward at work. So, anyhow, but, and then worked all week, and then here's Saturday. So, anyway, so that's it. Just kind of one of those reminders that you can push through things, and kind of just time management, and go like, okay, this has to get done, so this can pause, or that's not important to begin with, or whatever. Just all the lessons from it, you know. So, and to some of, because like the other day, I did like a 14-hour day, and then ran 4 miles afterwards. So just kind of, I still got to do the 4 miles, so got to figure out where to put it in. So yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's a little bit of brag, but like also just the short periods of like discomfort, but then reaping the benefits of short-term, long-term. So anyway, all right, I love you guys. Stay dangerous, and hopefully you're just chilling at home, like honestly, or enjoying some fall stuff. But yeah, grill up, watch a movie. Have something warm to drink. So, love you guys. Stay dangerous. And whether or not you thought about work or you're not thinking about work, go ahead and give a hearty, hearty.
Hey, caca. Yeah. Christopher Battles does. I think he does like 13 miles like 3 days a week or something. At least that's what he used to do.
He's a beast. Yeah. Kudos to the man.
Yeah. And of course, if I was Cotton Gin, I probably wouldn't be necessarily going out for a run, because I think he's doing enough physical exercise that that's not necessary. But So I did pull up Girl Up, Watch a Movie as a potential show title for that particular voicemail. So, all right, now I'm going to play this odd fellow's voicemail.
All right.
So, what's your favorite thing about fall? not falling? I like the pretty colors of the trees and the leaves. I don't much appreciate the whole brown palette that comes in from December to February. Everything's just kind of dull and brown around here. Kind of weird that, like, damn near Thanksgiving and the ditches are still green. Not even, you expect the fields to be green. They use all kinds of industrial fertilizers and shit. But like, I'm currently driving as I'm talking and the ditches are still fucking green. Like, the grass is still green. But anyway, I like cozy weather, and I like the smell of the wood stove. Don't much care for the holiday spice scented stuff. Not a fan of it. What else do we like about fall, love?
Blistering hot outside anymore?
That it's not blistering hot outside. Yes. I like that. But next month, you'll be bitching about how cold it is. So.
I like the fall.
No, that's true. That's winter. What else? Hoodies. Yep. Hoodies. Cutting firewood. Splitting firewood. Just generally being out in the woods doing woods any time of year, but in the fall when it's nice. Let's see. What else we got here? Oh, yeah. it's rut. Or is rut next month? Rut's right now, isn't it? Yeah, rut's right now. We live in the type of area where even if you know the roads and know exactly where you are, you still do 5-10 under the speed limit because if not, you may not make it home because of the deers. But, yeah, okay, bye.
All right, there's a follow-up, by the way.
Awesome.
That he, because he called back and had more to say.
I decided that I wasn't done. I looked at my phone and saw that I was at 258. Fucking panic buy. So, yes, the deer out here are fucking crazy. They will smash your car. I took out a brand new weed eater on the mowing trailer a couple seasons ago. I actually passed the deer with the truck, and the deer fucking smacked the trailer and crushed one of the brand new four-stroke weed eaters that we had. Yeah, it was a rabbit, I thought. Rabbit or a little coyote. A little bobcat. It could have been. So, things about the fall, man. What else we got? I don't know. I just didn't like that I panic buy, so I had to call back and fucking ramble some more. I know I should drone it out a little longer for Sir Bimrose's sake. He likes the way I drone on and make 0 point. I think it's his favorite part of the show, honestly. As much as he claims that it may not be his favorite, I think it might actually be his favorite. You ain't got to lie to kick it, bro. So anyway, yeah, that's fall stuff. Thanksgiving, turkey, pies, ham, all the fixings and trimmings. It's most of my family's birthday this month in the fall. And then we move on into the winter. It's supposed to be a lot of snow this year. Hope everybody's ready for that. What they're saying we're going to get a lot of snow this year. I don't know who they are or what authority they have to dictate how much snow we have. So, yeah, that's it, man. How many more times can I say that? Okay, bye.
Bye.
Chris, yeah, that was great.
I'm now going to have to put the authority song in the
I love that. Who are they to tell us what kind of snow we're going to have? What authority do they have?
Yeah.
But I agree. Yeah, I love the smell of a wood stove. I have to agree. That's oof. And I do enjoy. I was actually in the back channel. Weirdo had sent me a photo of all this firewood he had split, and I was mentioning that I can't wait to have our own place because I actually miss splitting firewood. It's a fantastic workout. And the sound of it, just there's just something very rustic about it that I dig. And considering the fact that I am a country girl at heart, no matter what I do, no matter how I try to be white priv and bougie, I really just like boots and jeans, and fall is a fantastic season in that nice temperature range where you need the flannel, but you can take it off while you're working. And yeah, fall is awesome.
You know what I like about fall?
What?
Bang, bang, Niner gang.
Niner gang.
Bang, bang, Niner gang.
Niner gang.
Who are we?
Yeah.
Fuck yeah. Who are we?
Yeah, anyway.
Football season for the win in fall. Holy shit.
Yeah, exactly. That is, that is one thing I appreciate, look forward to in fall. Now, all the other stuff about the weather and stuff, yeah, I'm with you on that. I mean, I kind of like going outside and, you know, the crunch of the leaves and you know, and it's, believe me, there's a lot of fucking leaves around here.
I hate the fact that I have to listen to the damned buzzing of the mowers at like 8 a.m. because they're vacuuming up every goddamn leaf.
Yes, well.
I don't like the fact that they do. I want them to leave the leaves and the acorns and shit. I think it adds appeal, but, you know, the hoa. Oh, fuck the hoa.
God. All right. We need to get high. And that means going to the higher consciousness segment.
Well, hold on, because we didn't finish talking about our favorite thing about fall.
I answered the question.
Yeah, well, I didn't.
Okay, well, fuck you.
Is that an offer, sir?
That's the after party.
So, favorite thing about fall, I think I agree with what everyone else has said. All inclusive. The lack of bugs, the smell of a wood fire, the leaves rustling. I also like the whole pumpkin pie thing. Not gonna lie, I'm a sucker for pumpkin pie and whipped cream. That's a life in the living right there. And I'm kind of looking forward to it for the holiday. We're doing something a little different for our holiday, so we're not worried about the turkey aspect this year. I don't have to be grossed out. Yay!
Yeah, I got to get some meat out of my beef freezer.
And God knows how full that sumbitch is. That large hunk of cow will very much be opening up a little bit of a pocket.
Yeah, it did. It did open a little pocket, made things a little easier to.
But it's also going to be paired with some other nom nom yummy stuff, so I'm very looking forward to that.
Yeah. Okay. So
we can get high.
Now let's get high.
I'll take a drink, and my name's Smoke Little Reef. You know, I like to smoke reefer. You know, it relaxes me and everything. A couple of doobies, you know, just to get you through the day and everything, but I do not freebase cocaine.
Yes. So. I've seen Brazil come up in the higher consciousness news a bit, and I've actually been to Brazil. In fact, Christ the Redeemer. I was actually in Rio de Janeiro, and I was at a place where I could see it at a distance, and I've got a photo of it. I'll have to find it, but
it's a great photo.
It's a great photo. But so I've been to Brazil. It's a very interesting country, and apparently they can't stop throwing cannabis events. It's changing.
Smoke weed every day.
Yes, that's okay. A new survey from the Center for Drug Tourism Studies at UERJ, a State University of Rio de Janeiro, shows that cannabis-focused fairs and festivals continue to expand across Brazil, with notable growth in the northeast region. Events such as Festival Diamba and Paraíba and the Febre de Arte Fair and Fortaleza and helping to drive a geographic shift, although more than half of all events remain concentrated in the southeast. Now, since 2023, cannabis-themed gatherings, including those centered on medicinal use and industrial hemp or responsible adult use, have grown exponentially nationwide, with annual increases above 35%. Now, the study also indicates an early trend toward decentralization. While the Southeast region hosted 56% of all cannabis events mapped in Brazil in 2024. This represents a slight decline from 2023, as the Northeast expanded its share from 15% to 25% in the same period. Now, the data comes from the report Between Culture, Tourism, and Activism, an analysis of cannabis events in Brazil by researchers Thiago Ferreira and Pinheiro Dias Pereira, Ale Cardoso Duarte and Breno Mercado de Oliveira of UERJ's Center for Drug Tourism Studies. Wow, that's a fucking...
That is a mouthful.
The fact that I didn't stumble too bad over all of those names, yeah, it's the fact that I'm from California and you almost learn Spanish as a second language. The study highlights a steady and significant rise in the number of events nationwide. In 2023, Brazil registered 123 cannabis-related events. In 2024, that number increased to 169, a 37.4% jump. Now, the Southeast led both years, particularly Sao Paulo and Rio de Janeiro. But the growth in the Northeast stands out, suggesting a shift toward greater regional diversity. Now, by this year, 2025, Pessoa and Fortaleza joined the list of Northeast capitals hosting major cannabis-themed events. Now, according to Tiago Pereira, the associate professor in the UERJ's Department of Tourism, coordinator of NEDUD, and one of the study's authors, the theme covered these events reflects shifting priorities. So in 2023, medical cannabis accounted for 33% of all event themes, followed by cannabis culture, 20%, recreational use, 17%, and legislation and historical reparation with 14%. By 2024, cannabis culture had moved to the top position with 26.1%, while medicinal content dropped to 23.1%. Recreational use programming rose to 21.5%. Now, Pereira notes that this evolution suggests a growing public interest in cultural and recreational aspects of cannabis beyond the medicinal dimension. And he also highlights the risk of discussion circles in 2024 as a sign that organizers may be seeking more interactive formats capable of attracting diverse audiences and stimulating dialogue. And I think, you know, what I like about this story, I think it kind of goes along with some thoughts I've been having about the Holy Herb in general. And I think I realize that there's been this, this campaign to just sort of like suppress this thing that is so obviously good for us, right? Or at least, everything has good and bad uses, but by and large, it's one of these things that is a benefit to humans rather than a harm. It's certainly more beneficial than the shit that Pfizer sells. I mean, come on, so this is, if you look at sort of the track of legalization, right, there's definitely, most people probably want this stuff legalized, or at least, get the fuck out of the business, right? So it's nice to see that this is also happening in other places. And honestly, I think one of the things, and we need to do is really kind of, take this, just think about what we can, especially with what happened with, with a 47 the spending bill that basically made hemp illegal in a year. Right. So, we might need to be doing, we may need to be doing some activism around that, because honestly,
we've actually been talking about that behind the mic we're going to get a hold of the kids at Bowl After Bowl and see what we can do about maybe starting a campaign in our own state and try to get the attention of our legislators to really recognize the harm that alcohol poses and the lack of risk associated, but the massive financial benefit to legalization.
Yeah, and the state already can see the benefits because of the stuff that they do sell. I mean, I can assure you that there's a lot of, we know several businesses that will not exist if this doesn't get fixed.
Correct.
So, this is exactly, thank you, Cotton Gin. We realize that we know that the kids have been doing this for a bit longer and probably.
That's exactly why we said we were going to reach out and see what kind of information we could get.
Yeah, exactly. So this is bottom line is that, it's just kind of tracking my own sort of, history with the Holy Herb. Yeah. I mean, this is always, while it may not have been something I consumed for a good chunk of my life, it's never really left my life. It's always been maybe kind of a weird part of my life, given how early I smoked my first J. But at the same time, is that such a bad thing? Well, no, I don't think so. I've spent my entire life seeing people drink versus people smoke, and guess what? I'd rather have somebody light up a J than take a swig of alcohol any fucking day.
Not to mention that it's not nearly as hard on your body.
Yeah.
Alcohol is a toxin.
It literally killed my mother, folks, and probably didn't help my dad, although he at least had the sense to quit at some point, which, and unfortunately cigarettes got him. But the point being is that, in moderation.
But we know, honey, why they don't want this to become a big thing. It's because who controls the purse strings? When asking why, the answers always follow the money.
Yes, well, and also the fact that, when honestly, this stuff opens your mind, right? This is and it's amazing.
It's harder to control people.
Yes. And we, Kathy O'Brien talks about that when you're talking about the MK Ultra shit. So, yeah, I mean, it's I think there's going to be, you know, I think we're going to see kind of almost a revolution occur, not just in our, you know, and everywhere, because I think people are starting to, again, people are starting to wake up and realize that the way that they've been running things ain't right, and we need to stand up and stop putting up with this shit, and you know,
I'm mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
Yeah, exactly. Now. Okay, of course, with this, me doing the Brazil story, you're getting the California story.
Yeah, you know, a little bit of interesting irony there. But, you know, the other thing I find ironic is one of the pioneering states in marijuana culture, California. California sober? Marijuana may help you drink less, according to a new study.
You sure you ain't the smartest guy in the world?
Goddamn so
It turns out that going California sober may actually help you stay away from alcohol, according to new research published in the American Journal of Psychiatry. A team of Brown University researchers conducted a study in which participants were given marijuana joints to smoke and then sent out to a controlled bar lab in which they were given the choice to have up to 8 mini alcoholic beverages. The experiment was conducted 3 separate times, once with 7.2% cannabis, once with 3.1% cannabis, and once with 0.03 cannabis, which was considered a placebo. A major component of the study was the replication of a real-life bar, complete with dark lighting and drinks on tap. Jane Merrick, a professor of behavioral and social science at Brown University, who led the study, stressed the importance of authenticity for participants, telling NPR that we wanted to make sure that when given the opportunity, you would be really driven to drink. The results revealed that participants' alcohol consumption fell by 19% after smoking cannabis with a 3.1% THC. The drop was even more significant after smoking the higher potency 7.2%. Participants ended up drinking 27% less alcohol than the placebo. Wait, what? I don't understand that. So they drank less on the placebo?
They drank less alcohol than when smoking the placebo.
Oh, drink. I get it. In other words, saying the placebo didn't do shit.
Yeah.
Got it. Yeah. Okay. So expanded legislation efforts have led to a major surge in marijuana usage. Its consumption has doubled over the past 10 years, according to a 2024 Gallup survey. Alcohol consumption is at a record low, with many turning to alternatives such as weed. Of the participants in the Brown trial, however, 40% met the criteria for alcohol use disorder. No surprise there. While cannabis could serve as a potential solution to heavy drinking, Metric acknowledged that there's still more research to be done. We're not ready to tell people seeking treatments for alcoholism, go ahead and substitute cannabis and it'll work out for you, she said. Well, I mean, it could, though. I mean, truly. So here's my thought. You spark up a joint and then you're too fucking lazy to go to the bar.
Yeah, I mean.
Or the you know, gas station for a beer.
I don't know.
It's just a theory.
Yeah.
Might catch on.
Well, I don't know. This tech thing has certainly caught on, hasn't it?
Hello, IT. Have you tried turning it off and on again? Have you tried sticking it up your arse?
All right. So it's funny because I had added this in our description for the show when I advertised the show. Yeah. The answer, the question I got from CSB is, it because of all the AI shit? Well, you know, a sharp escalation among Americans stating are starting to revolt against data centers.
You say you want a revolution. Well, you know, we all want to change the world.
That's a great song. As the cost of electricity continues to skyrocket, Georgia voters delivered a political surprise on Election Day, elevating Democrat Peter Hubbard to the state's Public Service Commission. Hubbard notably ran on rising utility costs and the spread of data centers, and his victory, along with another Democratic win in a separate statewide race, marks the first time in nearly 20 years the party has captured statewide office in Georgia. Hubbard, who will join the body that regulates the state's electric utility, ran on a pair of related concerns: rising utility costs and the rapid spread of data centers across the state. Now, the number one issue was affordability, Hubbard said, but a very close second was data centers and the concern around them just sucking up the water, the electricity, and the land, and not really paying any taxes. Yeah, I think that's a valid point, honestly. Georgia has become a magnet for data center investment in recent years, aided by generous tax incentives and a growing footprint of large-scale digital infrastructure. But it's also emerging as an early indicator of a broader national pushback, one that is increasingly bipartisan and increasingly organized, according to Wired. A new report released this week by Data Center Watch, a project of AI security firm 10A Labs, suggests that people are rapidly getting pissed about data centers. The project catalogs community-level opposition across the country using public sources such as news reports, legal filings, and social media. His latest findings show that between March and June of 2025, local resistance either blocked or delayed $98 billion in data center projects, surpassing the $64 billion tracked in the project's first report, which covered May of 2024 through March of 2025. So this has been going on pretty much since the beginning, I think. Mikkel Vila, the report's author, said that data suggests a significant shift in public sentiment. While he noted methodological caveats, including the possibility that more total construction simply yields more opportunities for opposition, other indicators point to what he described as a turning point. Nearly 50,000 signatures opposing specific data centers were submitted in the March to June window alone. As we've been noting all year, rising electricity use is a unifying theme in the backlash. Hubbard's victory in Georgia underscores that point, but similar dynamics are unfolding in other states with concentrated data center activity. Now, resistance to data centers is not confined to Democrat constituencies. It's also not confined to AI. Just don't want the fucking data centers. And according to the Data Center Watch report, pushback has grown across red, blue, and purple states alike. Yeah. I mean, because
with the story we covered about that town in Texas.
Yes.
And that massive data center that's going to take like 10 million gallons of water a day, with a town that already is having water crisis. Like, holy fuck.
Yeah. It's amazing how Google, let's just, okay. So, cause this is I'm not going to actually pull the story, but I saw, I confirmed this. I'm going to bring it up here. So Google must double AI serving capacity every 6 months to meet demand, according to the AI infrastructure boss.
Just let that sink in for a second. How many data centers that's going to take to facilitate? And the demand is going to outpace the growth, sadly.
Yeah, no kidding. And this is and so you just kind of go, the fuck, people? Come on. Like, why? I mean, of course, they're taking resources from the land, but Google used to be all environmentally friendly, even Bill Gates, and now they're going, well...
Until it became unprofitable to be.
Yeah, basically. Yeah, because in order to be able to do what they want to do, yeah, you're going to have to build data centers. And guess what? All of that, yeah, and people are looking at it, they're going, fuck this, right? That's so of course this is what's happening, and yes... Push, you know, again.
They're getting AI sticker shock finally.
Yeah, they're fine. Yes. And so at some point, yes,
it's the real cost of AI at this point.
Yes, yeah, the real cost of AI and the real, yeah, and being pushed for everything for every fucking reason, right? It's not that the technology
in everything.
In everything. Not everything needs AI, folks. Well, and certainly this next thing doesn't need AI.
Oh, I think you're going to love this. If you dislike AI to the point that we do, or if you don't, this might give you a reason to, because Anthropic says an AI may have just attempted the first truly autonomous cyber attack.
Yes, I also have security flaws.
In a new report, AI company Anthropic detailed a highly sophisticated espionage campaign that deployed its artificial intelligence tools to launch automated cyber attacks around the globe. The attackers aimed high, targeting government agencies, big tech companies, banks, and chemical companies, and succeeded in a small number of cases, according to Anthropic. The company says that its research links the hacking operation to the Chinese government. Oh, of course it's the Chiners! The company claims that the findings are a watershed moment for the industry, marking the first instance of a cyber espionage scheme carried out by AI. We believe this is the first documented case of a large-scale cyber attack executed without substantial human intervention. Anthropic wrote in a blog post, Fast Company has reached out to China's embassy in D.C. for comment about the report. Anthropic says that it first detected the suspicious use of its products in mid-September and conducted an investigation to uncover the scope of the operation. The attacks weren't fully autonomous. Humans were involved to set them in motion, but they manipulated Anthropic's Claude, the code tool, a version of the AI assistant designed for developers to execute complex pieces of the campaign. To get around Claude's built-in safety guardrails, the hackers worked to jailbreak the AI model, basically tricking it into doing smaller, benign-seeming tasks without the broader context of their application. The attackers also told the AI tool that they were working in a defense capacity for a legitimate cyber firm in order to persuade the model to let down its defenses. After bending Claude to their will, the attackers set the AI assistant to work analyzing its targets. So they turned literally Claude against the fucking company. That's beautiful. After bending Claude to their will, the attackers set the AI assistant to work analyzing its targets, identifying high-value databases, and writing code to exploit weaknesses it found in their targets, systems, and infrastructure. The framework was able to use Claude to harvest credentials, usernames, and passwords, allowed it to further access and then to extract a large amount of private data, which it categorized according to its intelligence value, Anthropic wrote. The highest privilege accounts were identified, backdoors were created, and data was exfiltrated with minimum human supervision.
In the last phase, the attackers directed Claude to document their actions, producing files, including stolen credentials, and the systems that were analyzed, which could build on in future attacks. By the way, this is something from the day job. About one of the most prevalent ways that people get in is actually like stealing credentials and stuff. This was in the Verizon report or something. That's pretty much the biggest thing that they use. And the company estimates that at least 80% of the operation was carried out autonomously without a human directing it.
Now, Anthropic noted in its report that much like it does with less malicious tasks, the AI generated errors during the cyber attack, making false claims about harvesting secret info and even hallucinating some of the logins it produced. Even with some errors, an agentic AI that's right most of the time can point itself at a lot of targets, quickly create and execute exploits, and do a lot of damage in the process. The new report from Anthropic isn't the first that an AI company has discovered its tools being misused in elaborate hacking schemes. It's not even a first for Anthropic. Are we surprised?
Boy, yeah, and we think we can try to protect this. This is...
easy, phone boy.
Yeah, anyway, let's go to the junk drawer.
Humanity was incapable of solving even its most basic problems, like garbage, which had been stacked for centuries.
Yeah, well, I don't know. Some of these planes have been probably in business for centuries. So the NTSB releases a preliminary report on the UPS plane crash in Louisville. What do we know? Yeah. So just 2 weeks after the fatal November 4th UPS crash left 14 dead in Louisville, a preliminary National Transportation Safety Board report found that the left engine detached from the plane and caught fire. Yeah, that's a bad day right there, isn't it, folks?
Damn.
Yeah. And additionally, the investigation found evidence of fatigue cracks, among other issues.
Oh, so inspections were failed. Fantastic.
Okay, the crash involved a UPS Airlines MD-11 bound from Louisville to Hawaii that crashed right after takeoff just south of the Louisville Muhammad Ali International Airport on Grade Lane. The three crew members on board and 11 people were on the ground were killed, according to the NTSB, and an additional 23 people were injured from the crash.
Now,
those are some big ass planes. I can tell you, I've seen them. They're huge.
Yes. As part of the investigation, the NTSB, an independent federal agency tasked with investigating transportation accidents and recommending safety guidelines, invited the Federal Aviation Administration, UPS, Boeing, General Electric Aerospace, the Independent Pilots Association, and the Teamsters Airline Division to be parties in the investigation. Oh, boy. A lot of gambling going on there. The preliminary report, which was released on November 20th, serves as a basis to provide early facts of the crash, but doesn't issue a probable cause or make safety recommendations. Although when you get to this, folks, I think it'll be pretty obvious what the issue is. The agency has previously said it's likely to release a full report in about a year or more, though aviation experts told the Courier-Journal the NTSB is likely to take longer than a year to release its full report. Now, the preliminary investigation found that after the plane rotated for takeoff on the runway, the left engine and pylon separated from the wing of the plane. The investigation also determined a fire ignited on the left engine while it traversed above the fuselage and subsequently impacted the ground. Oh, additionally, a fire ignited near the left pylon attachment, and this fire continued to burn until ground impact of the plane. Now, despite the flames engulfing the left side of the aircraft, the report revealed the plane cleared the airport fencing but never surpassed 30 feet above ground level. The plane's landing gear made contact with the UPS Supply Chain Solutions warehouse on the southern edge of the airport property. The plane then made an impact with a storage yard and two additional buildings, including a petroleum recycling facility, and was most likely consumed by fire, according to the investigation.
Especially with crashing into a petroleum recycling facility.
Yes. So one witness in the air traffic control tower at the Louisville Airport told the NTSB the takeoff speed appeared normal for the MD-11, a large freight plane, but that the airplane did not climb normally. Another witness recalled the plane stopped climbing, lost altitude, and then rolled slightly to the left. NTSB investigators recovered much physical evidence over the half-mile crash scene, noting the airplane wreckage was significantly fragmented and burned. In the aftermath of the UPS crash, comparison was made to the 1979 DC-10 crash in Chicago. And killed nearly 300 people after the left pylon, which supported the engine, came loose and took out a hydraulic line. Now, the DC-10 is considered an earlier generation of the MD-11, and the NTSB investigation into the UPS crash made a direct comparison to the DC-10 crash, noting it as a similar event. Now, the 1979 crash saw the left engine and pylon and part of the leading edge of the left wing separate from the airplane and fall to the runway, eventually leading to the plane to crash in an open field. An investigation by the NTSB into the 1979 DC-10 crash found that human error from maintenance personnel was likely a contributing factor to the fatal crash.
Sounds like similar, doesn't it?
Oh, but this gets even better, honey. On November 7th, Boeing, the manufacturer responsible for the MD-11, which it acquired as part of a 1997 merger with McDonnell Douglas, right? Which recommends the three airline operators of the MD-11 to suspend flight operations of the model. At least one aviation legal expert called this move very unusual. Now, then on November 8th, the FAA issued an emergency airworthiness directive to the owners and operators of the MD-11, which determined the unsafe condition is likely to exist or develop in other products of the same type of design and prohibits further flight until the planes are individually inspected and corrective actions are taken. Now, on November 14th, the FAA issued another emergency airworthiness directive related to the November 4th UPS crash. The newest directive added an additional 9 models of similar planes to the grounding, including variants of the MD-10 and DC-10, and stated these planes are subject to the same unsafe condition as the MD-11. The NTSB blaming investigation of the UPS plane crash is ongoing. So basically, what I'm hearing here, right, is that there's a design flaw in these fucking planes. And basically, yeah, they've been this way for a long fucking time. Going back to, so a 1979 crash of a DC-10, well, that means that plane probably had to be built in the 70s, probably, right? And so this design and these planes, you know, they tend to, planes are expensive, and so they tend to fly them as much as they can for as long as possible. And but at some point, yeah, this thing has a design flaw that multiple planes have crashed with this thing. Are they going to be able to fix it? I don't think so. But this is, yeah, unsafe at any fucking altitude, it seems like.
Unsafe at any altitude, definitely a show title.
Yes, okay.
But I want to point out the fact that I don't find any coincidence to the effect that the holiday season happens when these planes have to be grounded. I mean, definitely not.
Coincidence? I think not!
Yeah, I know about that. Well, this next story, honey, this is all yours.
Speaking of airplanes, a congressman of the age of 71 is blaming Elon for the fact he was looking at dirty pictures on a plane.
Oh, Elon!
Jacking it, spanking it, smack.
Representative Brad Sherman blamed Elon Musk's ex-algorithm for serving him saucy pictures amid a potential scandal involving him scrolling through softcore pornography in public. The 71-year-old California Democrat was photographed looking at pictures of lingerie-clad girls on his tablet while on a flight. The picture of Sherman was posted to X by the Dear White Staffers account, an account made of a group of Capitol Hill staffers working to expose poor working conditions. The images were later reposted by Donald Trump Jr. As the images circulated on social media, John Brezhnev of Punchbowl News secured an interview with Rep. Sherman, who claimed the photos were served to him by X's algorithm. This was on Twitter. These pictures came up on For You. I must have looked at more than 1,000 posts, Sherman said. X's For You tab is an algorithm-driven feed that shows users a mix of old and new tweets from a variety of accounts, including ones they don't follow. According to Social Bee, the content served in a user's For You tab is determined by a variety of factors. The Twitter feed algorithm brings in out-of-network tweets from accounts you don't follow based on your past interactions. Your pasts like retweets and replies help the algorithm decide what to show you. Social Bee explained, posts liked by those in your network can also influence what appears in the For You tab, according to X. In the three pictures of Sherman posted by Dear White Staffers, multiple images of lingerie-clad girls appeared one after another on his feed. Is it pornography? I don't think Elon Musk thinks so. Is it inappropriate? No, said Sherman. X considers women in lingerie to be adult content, according to its terms of service. Their definition of adult content includes full or partial nudity, including close-ups of genitals, buttocks, or breast. An X user can turn off media that may contain sensitive content in their settings. Musk has consistently tinkered with the For You tab with controversial results. During his 3 years at X, he's been accused of juicing the For You tab to boost his own tweets and those of right-wing accounts. Sherman, who has served in Congress since 97, admitted he didn't mind getting served the saucy photographs. If I see a picture of a woman, might I look at it longer than a sunset? Yeah. Did he really fucking compare a lingerie-clad woman to a sunset? And okay, wait, I... You did this on purpose, you did this to trigger me.
Fuck you!
You knew I was going to have to bite into this, and right before the last call, too. Dude, you're on a plane. You're looking at tits and ass. Yeah, it's covered by pretty lacy stuff, but you're looking at tits and ass. You don't think you're going to get a hard-on? Then what are you going to do? Oh, stewardess, can I have a blanket so nobody sees me rub one out? Or are you going to go to the lav and take a 30-fucking-minute, quote, poop break while you're waxing your carrot? Come on, Senator Strokes-a-Lot. Knock it off.
Senator Strokes-a-Lot. That's another potential show title. So can we, so I think we need the last call.
No, I'm not done yet.
Oh God.
Yes. I think for this one, we don't have any more voicemails. That's fine. But
that's cool.
But we're gonna talk about Linus Torvalds, who's the creator of the Linux kernel, right? He's sort of okay with vibe coding, actually.
Very interesting, but stupid.
Yes. During a recent open source software convention in South Korea, Torvalds expressed some cautious support for vibe coding, although he said he sees it more as a way for young coders to experiment with computing rather than a sensible way to go about developing corporate software products. Now, vibe coding may be a horrible, horrible idea from a maintenance standpoint if you actually tried to make a product, Torvalds said, but I think it's great, a great way for new people to get involved and get excited about computers and get computers to do something that maybe they couldn't do otherwise. So I'm actually fairly positive about this all. Now, that said, he scoffed at the people who hope to make billion-dollar companies by just using vibe coding.
And there's plenty of them out there.
Yeah, there is. Yeah, I don't know about this story, though. This is this next one here.
This was definitely beautiful, especially because of the fact it's also local, because a semi-truck driver has been cited in Crossville for multiple instances of diesel theft.
Driving a truck with my high heels on.
Ariel Christians was cited for the theft of diesel fuel from a 7-Eleven store after a police investigation on November 9th. According to a report by the Crossville PD, units responded to a report of a white semi-truck stealing diesel but released the driver when the clerk confirmed payment. Subsequently, a representative from the corporate office contacted the officer and reported that the driver, identified as Mr. Christians, had been engaging in a scheme to steal large quantities of fuel over several months, dating back to September 2nd. The representative explained that the driver was using a special key to tamper with the fuel pumps, manipulating the gears to pump more fuel than was registered and paid for. In the two instances reported in the article, Christian stole 463 gallons of diesel, totaling around $850 in losses. Wow. I'm just wondering how he acquired, like, maybe was he like a porter at a truck stop and just happened to make a steal or make a copy of like a pump key, and maybe all of the, you know, all of, I don't fucking know. All I know is this guy's a fucking idiot.
Yes, I don't know why they haven't arrested him either, but
have they not though? I thought that like
because I don't remember exactly what the circumstances were in the article, but anyway, it was just
I feel like they did though, only because of the fact that they cited him, so yeah. At the very least, if they haven't yet arrested him, if he shows up for court, and yes, I know, I say if.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I mean, honestly, here's the thing. You're going to end up at a way station at some point. And if your license gets flagged because you're wanted for a failure to appear somewhere.
Yeah, you're fucked.
You're jolly well fucked.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you're jolly well fucked if you don't know this about IHOP omelets. They're not just eggs. And customers are shocked, I tell you.
There's a lot you don't know.
Yeah, well, IHOP is known for its famed fluffy pancakes, but if you ever ordered an omelet at the breakfast chain, you might wonder why the freakishly fluffy omelets aren't just as popular. I mean, these things dominate a plate from edge to edge. The giant breakfast dish looks like it holds 8 eggs, even though it claims to be just a 3-egg omelet. Turns out they're eggs actually made with some pancake batter.
Yeah, so the reason we highlighted that as a last call, because as you know, we are big on know what's in your food. And if you're going to a restaurant and you're thinking, oh, I'll just order an omelet, you know, it's eggs, it's cheese, it's meat, it's veg, I should be fine. I can overlook the fact it's a seed oil. And then you find out there's fucking pancake batter in it. It's not listed on the menu. And that, to me, that's lying. And that could potentially be a health hazard if someone doesn't know that, especially with like your allergies. Like you could fucking go for an omelet thinking you're fine because for some reason we end up in an IHOP and there's no other option. And then like you end up having a massive allergy issue because fucking pancake batter. Like, are you kidding?
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know what? I think we've gotten to the end of the script. We've actually made it.
Well, that's about it, really.
What?
Shirley, you can't be serious.
I am serious. And don't call me Shirley.
Fuck it. I gotta go.
Yeah, we gotta go. We gotta go to Studio 33.
Yes, we do. And do some dinner stuff and some post-production. And, you know, this has been a great goddamn time.
That's right. But you know what?
I'm so fucking over this.
It is time for this to be over.
I got an idea to end all this bullshit.
Jordan Fay's back.
swoosh, and that's the game!
Fuck you, fuck you, fuck you. You're cool, and fuck you, I'm out.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.